Ian knows about this.
Ian knows.
He knows.
I do. I just am sad that the audience will never know the tea conversation. We're truly spilling the tea.
We're truly.
That is why I hit record. Look, you never know. As you know, you never know what you're going to get. You got to be recording everything at all times.
Yeah, you really do.
Hello and welcome to Talking to Lab with Chris Savage. I'm your host, Chris Savage, and I'm joined by the one and only Sylvia Lubow. Hey, Sylvie.
It's me. It's you.
It's me.
Us.
It's you. It's us. We're here
it's
again.
A new song. It's me. It's you. It's us.
Okay, great. So we have a great interview today. Ian Faison, who is the founder of Caspian Studios, is here. Caspian's a really interesting podcasting business that works with marketers to create unique content, to tell their story, get out there, help do brand gen, so create content that gets people to be more connected to the brand. And they're doing a lot of wild stuff, including making fiction podcasts for B2B companies. So stay tuned for that. Very interesting interview, tons of takeaways. If you're thinking about making content and you're trying to figure out how to do it, this is going to be a great interview for you. But first, Sylvie, what's got you talking so loud?
Oh, man. I just watched the BlackBerry movie. Have you seen it?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what? You're like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know. You have thoughts and feelings.
Well, I know you have a take, so you can give me your take.
I thought it was great. Yeah. I thought it was so good. And it was just funny to see, to remember the world before the iPhone and to like sort of see that moment when Steve Jobs is like announcing its release against the backdrop of BlackBerry. And it really changed the world. Change the world.
It did. No, that's a great movie. And the reason I had that face is I watched the BlackBerry movie and I watched the Tetris movie, like basically like 2 days in a row. And I was really hyped for BlackBerry. I thought it was good, but I had no expectation for the Tetris movie and I loved it.
Interesting.
Have you seen the Tetris one?
Haven't seen the Tetris
one. You should definitely watch it. It's like on Apple TV Plus, I think.
It is. Yeah.
The story of how Tetris came to be. And it was all this like negotiations with the Russians and all this shit. It's very good. Worth watching. Yeah.
Worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Worth a watch. What's got you talking too loud other than Tetris?
Well, I'll keep it on content. Alexander and I are watching Big Mouth. Oh, have you seen it?
Amazing.
And it's just really just, if you haven't seen it, it's a animation featuring like Nick Kroll, John Mulaney about like kids growing up and going through puberty, and it's so funny, so real so funny, and it's just like we're dying laughing. And then I find that like it's like bringing up conversations about like that awkward time.
Yeah.
And like, did you ever experience this? And it's like, did you experience this? And that doesn't always happen with content, so it's been a delight. But you know what? It's just when you see the right content and it really resonates and it's really funny and it's like hitting you in the right way, like we know that stands out. And this interview with Ian, that is what he's going to be talking about. So really great interview, and we'll get to it right after the break.
Hey guys, it's me,
Frank the Ad Guy.
If you're a startup with big dreams, you need a CRM that can keep up. Luckily, there's HubSpot for Startups, a unique platform that unites your entire front office from marketing to sales to support and offers a ton of resources for navigating the ups and downs of early stage growth. Beginnings are never easy, but they sure can be easier. Visit HubSpot.com/startups to learn more. Looking to harness the power of video for your business? Whether you're hosting webinars, onboarding new customers, or creating a spiffy landing page, video is key to making an impact. And that's where Wistia comes in. With our complete video marketing platform, we help you create, host, and share videos that not only get views, they also get results. And the cherry on top? Wistia's in-depth analytics and handy email forms. They're the perfect tools for lead generation and understanding your audience. So if you're ready to level up your capital V video marketing strategy, head on over to wistia.com/TTL. That's WISTIA.com wistia.com/TTL. And don't forget to follow at Wistia on social media for more tips, tricks, and video treats. And now, back to the podcast.
Ian, so great to meet you. Thank you for coming on the show. Really excited that you're here. And as you know, the show is called Talking Too Loud because when I get excited about something, I cannot control the volume of my voice. And so we love to start the show by asking you the question, what has you talking too loud today?
Yeah, I suffer with the same affliction, much to the chagrin of my wife. And I'm a night person. She's a morning person. So Perfect. It'll be like 8:30 at night and I'm like super fired up talking about something. And, you know, and I talk a lot and I talk for a living. And so, I talk too loud far too often as well. But what has me talking too loud is I got this new pair of pants. And okay. I've been telling everyone about these pants. So I'm sure you're familiar with, like a Patagonia pants. Sort of like puffy jacket. Yeah. I'm sure you're familiar. Yeah. Pants.
Do you know pants?
Do you believe in pants?
Well, what's funny is there was a day in history where pants were invented, right? Like they didn't exist forever. So
that is crazy. Yeah.
Right. And there's lots of cultures that don't wear pants, don't wear trousers, you know?
Yep.
But anywho, so I bought this pair of pants.
And that's what we'll be talking about today. History of pants. Honestly, I want to know when they were invented. I want to know.
Yeah, we need the date. We need the date.
Sylvie, this is your calling, I feel.
I'm just going to go Google it.
Okay, we're distracting you so much. Yes. But go ahead.
But tell us about these pants.
Yeah, so founded in 1800. No, so I'm a lover of the outdoors, but I'm a hater of the cold. I don't like to be cold. And, I have like a Patagonia little jacket that I wear, which is nice, you know, packable warmth, as they say. And I was like, why don't they have pants that do the same thing? And so anyways, I found this pair of pants from the good people at, I think, Mountain Hardware. And there's like a puffy jacket, but it's for your legs. And let me tell you, I wear these things far too often now. And my wife thinks they're extremely silly. Oh, friends think they're extremely silly.
You live in puffy pants.
Yeah, I have puffy pants.
Are they called puffy pants? What are they called?
They have some cool mountainy name. It's like the silencer pants or something like that.
Of course this exists. This is genius. It's so funny and great.
It is like your legs are getting a warm hug and it is delightful on these chilly mornings here in Walnut Creek, California. So so that's what I'm talking too loud about. And so anyways, I've been getting made fun of by everybody for wearing these things because they do look pretty silly. And then my father-in-law and mother-in-law show up and they're like, those pants, where did you get those? And both of them were like, we need to get those. So anyways, I feel very justified with the crowd of people in their 70s who liked my pants.
So what temperature, like when are you like, it's time for the puffy pants? Like what temperature does it have to hit outside for you to do that?
I would say 30s and 40s. Are like perfect puffy pants weather.
It's just funny because like it's never occurred to me to look for that. But obviously on those days, like it's like 30 degrees this morning here, your legs are cold. Like, and you're just used to it. It's like I'm wearing a really warm jacket. I have cold legs. I'm like, this is just my life. Like, and the idea that exists is so funny and great.
You have forever changed Chris's life. Like
I literally just ordered.
He just bought the pants. Without a doubt. 100%.
Oh my God, that's great.
I live to serve.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, look, speaking of living to serve, let's talk a little bit about Caspian Studios, which is your business. Podcast is a service provider for B2B companies. You help lots of B2B companies tell their stories. I want to get into all of that. But first, I'll just start with like, when did you fall in love with podcasts? And like, how did you decide that was going to be a good medium for B2B?
Yeah, so fell in love. My dad was a big radio guy. He grew up, he's an older guy, and he grew up without a television. And so he's loved radio. So I spent summers in the car with him. He always had a radio on. He had a radio on literally in every room of the house, not even kidding you. And so I listened to a lot of radio growing up. And so I loved like Paul Harvey, the rest of the story, and I loved like all sorts of different radio things. So I was always a big fan of radio. And then I went to the Army And I was, between my time at West Point and the Army, I listened to a lot of podcasts, a lot of time driving, a lot of things like that. And I remember there was a time when I was sitting in Afghanistan and I looked at my phone and I had done 11,000 hours of listening to podcasts at that time in my life. And I was like, man, that's a lot. You know, I was thinking of the like Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. Yeah. I'm like, that is an absolute ton of podcast listening.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, that's 5 years of like, that's your listening to podcasts like it's your job.
Yeah. And so I was like, that's a pretty crazy thing. I wonder if that's ever going to be a something that happens later in my life. So flash forward, you know, years later, and I had co-founded a media company, and we basically had the biggest publication on Medium, if you remember Medium. So we had like 2 million uniques a month. And it hit me that if you looked at the B2B landscape, there was just a lot of really bad podcasts out there or a lot of amateur stuff. And I was like, it seems like there should be a market for something that's a very elevated, professional quality show. And just like a lot of people weren't doing that. So anyways, I ended up starting Caspian years later after doing a bunch of different podcast stuff in the media world and launching Caspian as a production company, you know, as a podcast service company. And then really dug into sort of like the ROI of podcasts and how they can like help your business and, you know, working with a lot of really cool companies and then digging in and finding out like, hey, these things turns out are like the perfect, like quote unquote brand gen machine that if you build a good show that it can drive brand awareness and it can drive ROI and pipeline and it can accelerate pipeline and it can source new deals and it can develop relationships faster. And you can build a community and you can do all these things if you have a really good, well-produced, popular show. And then there's tons and tons of, you know, people making podcasts. And I think people sort of got scared a little bit about that sort of stuff. And I sort of looked at it as like, the more entrants there are into the market, the better you stand out if you're actually good. And so, you know, it just ended up being something that I think B2B companies were looking for a way to reach an audience in a new way. And I think that just like audio is a forever medium, right? It's a hands-free medium. Video, you know, very much replaces reading because you need your eyes to do it. And audio, you don't. And so now, you know, now we do almost every one of our shows is a video show that you can watch too. But I think it's just like these two mediums, video and audio, are like the perfect sort of symmetric way to, you know, reach your audiences and have really honest, you know, conversations with them.
Let's talk about brand gen. That's a term that is very new, I think, for most folks. Can you talk about what that is? Because it really resonates with how I think about this and the opportunity here. But like, just like for folks who don't know, let's talk about what is brand gen and then like, why does this format work well there?
Yeah. So, you know, the way that I look at brand gen is it's a type of campaign where you can definitively create a brand halo around it while also driving like actual pipeline. So you can point to the campaign and be like, those seven deals were sourced or accelerated by this deal. So if you were to look at like a Google AdWords campaign, you can make an argument that there's a brand component to that. For sure. Just like any marketing campaign, of course there's a brand component and of course there's a pipeline component, right? That's the whole point of doing it. But really, you're not going to get a feel for the brand. You're not going to get a sense of the personality of the brand. You're not going to get that halo effect of like, I've seen that thing and I understand what they're about, that like emotional personality sort of a thing, right? And that's like what I think of as brand is like, you know, your brand is your experience, right? It is your sales experience, it's your marketing experience, it's your, you know, customer experience, and it's also your personality, right? And so, if you're to do a billboard, that's very much seen as a brand play, right? Because you're probably going to say something pithy, you know, on there, make some joke. But really, it's so hard to look at it and say, like, how did it do for pipeline, right? Beyond like a brand lift. And out-of-home campaigns, all sorts of stuff like that, there's all sorts of people who have been able to prove that stuff. But really, from a targeting perspective, it's much harder. So when I think about brand gen campaigns, it is you are being able to target key accounts and personas that you're going after and look at those accounts afterwards and say, did they buy? But you're also going to get the halo effect of people experiencing your brand. And like with content, with a show, video series, or a podcast or whatever, they actually experience how you think and how you feel. And that to me is what like brand is. And then you also have like sort of the pipeline play there. So anyways, long-winded answer, but.
Well, I think it's just very interesting. I see the world very similarly in terms of that type of content, podcasts, video shows, long form content that's top of the funnel. It's very new from a cost perspective. It's very new, but it's so interesting because it's all about that time. You know, it's the time with the brand to experience the brand, the time to like build a relationship. I think about a lot of this stuff is like relationship building, and you can do it with advertising. It just costs a lot more money and takes a lot of time, and the increments of moments have to add up in a way where, you know, if you can find an angle on a show or you can find an angle on a series or something, suddenly like you can earn a lot of someone's time and build a relationship. And then that adds up in all these different ways. I think it's interesting you're talking about the specific account thing too, because that seems like a very concrete way to know that this is working.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a customer who they spent, we'll just say $100,000 for even numbers on their show. So, you know, it's not a cheap production, but it's a really good show. They do good numbers in terms of listeners. They have a pretty good listenership, and that, you know, they post their videos, on social, you know, the people like them and comment and, you know, they do that sort of stuff. And one of the accounts they were going after, no relationship with this account, they said, hey, Caspian, could you get these people on the show? We said, sure, get them on the show. They, put them in the sales cycle, you know, 3 months later, they closed the deal with this company for $800,000. And so, you know, there's really not a lot of marketing campaigns that you could do that can do both of those things, right? Like,
yes,
you know, find me a campaign who can do both, sort of a thing. And like, I look at like event series is one of the ones that you can do that. But the key is that you have to co-create it with your customers and prospects. And so that's where I look at advertising. Advertising, all it is saying, buy my stuff. That's it. There's nothing else that's happening there. It's just saying, buy my stuff, right? Maybe if you're doing an advertising campaign of maybe some of the social good that you did or something like that, like maybe, but even still, it's very look at me, right? Whereas when you're co-creating with your audience, you're saying, look at them. Like, look at the achievements that they've done, that they've created. Of course, it's self-serving. Like, we are all in business to make a profit and to sell our stuff. But it's like, but you can help others and you can accelerate their careers, by co-creating with them. And I think if you're doing it the right way, then you can achieve both. And again, that's like, that to me is brand gen, right? Like that to me is like, hey, you get a sense of who we are as a group and how we approach things, and how we want to, you know, uplift our customers and our community in turn.
Awesome. Okay. Let's, you know, I kind of teased this earlier, but I want to go into like some of the wilder topics of shows, but I'd love for you to tell me about it. Like, what are some of the different formats that you're using, things that you see working, like risks that more companies should take? Like, what are you seeing right now?
Yeah, I mean, the big one far and away that we're investing heavily in going forward is fiction. I think that B2B fiction is essentially non-existent. And it's crazy.
So,
just, and the reason...
I think we're giggling because I was like, I was so into the HR murder mystery show and I was looking at your website and I was this is genius. Why isn't there more of it?
Right. Well, hopefully there will be soon. It's funny as a marketer and as someone who spent a lot of time trying to like create stories in a nonfiction sense, I realized as we started making the fiction stuff, that you can actually tell a much better story when it's fake. And so you can get all of the elements that you want to tell in the story. And you know what? You know that customer that you always want to tell their story, they could never get it approved from legal, they could never do all that stuff. Guess what? You can tell that person's story now in an even better way if it's fiction. And so like there's all sorts of things that you can do with fiction storytelling. You can have a very three-dimensional character who has a home life and has you know, a spouse that they need to get back to on the, because they have a, you know, kid with a dance recital. And if they don't finish their accounting work because it's the end of quarter, then they don't get to go see their, you know, their loved one. And, oh, by the way, we have an accounting software that automates your tasks for you, you know, but like you can really paint those pictures when you use fiction, and you can tell, most importantly, an entertaining story, something that people actually love. And so we've done two fiction series. We've done a show called The Hacker Chronicles in partnership with Tenable, which is basically like Breaking Bad, but for like cybercrime. It's a gal who's a barista, and she decides to do her first cybercrime. And she goes on the dark web and downloads some gnarly stuff. And this whole crazy story. Yeah.
So cool.
And then the bad guy in season two is played by Michael C. Hall, you know, played Dexter. So, you know, like, it's an incredible story. We've done almost 2 million listeners on that show. It's really a just absolutely thrilling thing. People in the cybersecurity community.
So much.
Yeah, it's great.
Can you talk about like, okay, so we're getting into something that's so different. No one is doing this. You are the only people I have seen who are doing fiction-based shows for B2B.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
You just set a big number for podcasting. Like 2 million listeners is a ton.
Ton.
And
yeah.
So that is remarkable. How's it working? Like, are the companies that you're doing this for, they're like, hell yeah. Or they're like, oh, I'm confused. Or are they like super pumped?
Yeah. So we made Hacker Chronicles. And it was not a star-studded cast of fantastic actors, but not movie and film or TV actors, right? It was extremely good voice actors. And so when we made our second project, fiction project, Murder in HR, we really wanted to push into, you know, more well-known sort of actors with, you know, the assumption that it could probably get, you know, an even bigger sort of size audience. And we did really good numbers on Hacker Chronicles. But I had this assumption, and I still have this assumption, that first off, Hollywood does not tell business stories accurately. So they don't fundamentally understand business.
Yes.
And they definitely don't understand.
Usually a caricature, right?
Yeah, it's a caricature, right? But we do, yeah. Right, at Caspian. I've done like 2,000 interviews with executives from like every single, you know, type of company in tech. I know a lot of these people, you know, like we all do, right? And nobody tells our stories correctly, right? When I wanted to build out this fiction stuff, I wanted to like be able to tell these stories with the appropriate amount of like respect and love and poking fun and all that stuff that like we feel and we spend our lives, our careers doing this. And there's a lot more to tech than like, you know, AI robots are going to kill us, right? So that was the first piece. The second piece is that like B2B marketers are desperately, desperately seeking to be creative. They have these ideas. You go talk to them and they have these ideas. They have really cool things that they want to say. But no CFO will ever greenlight any of these ideas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, y'all did 110-100, which is a phenomenal documentary. Like as good of a documentary as you can tell in this world. I love it. And when I show that to people, I'm like, hey, we can make a documentary like this amazing one from Wistia. We're a Wistia customer, by the way. I should put that out in the ether. Yeah.
But I guess the listeners are, he's a Wistia customer.
Yeah.
You can go to castmeanstudios.com. You can see a video right on there that's hosted.
You've got the rounded player right on the front. It looks great.
Oh, you know, actually, fun note. This is a quick aside. So we have the video, you know, right there on the main page. But we have a button that is basically a case study button on our main page. And that's the most clicked thing on our entire website. And I don't know why more people don't do that. So anyways.
I want to give another aside, actually. But I obviously now I remember you and that we've met. I was like, as we started talking, I'm like, something about the way you're talking, like, I know you. And I'm like, oh, yes, we met. And like, we've chatted in 2022, right? That's when we first started connected. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm such an idiot. I was just like, I haven't met him yet. And then of course I'm telling you like, no, wait, I have, I know you are. This is so,
to be fair to you, and to me, I have no idea what we talked about.
Something about hearing you passionately talk about telling the stories. It came back to me. I'm like, oh, I know you.
That's good.
Oh my god!
I'm glad that the passion is the thing that seems to. You know, I was on a call yesterday with someone. We're pitching a really crazy fiction idea, and we got to pitch their leadership team, and they were just like, you know, you just love these stories so much.
You do,
and I'm like, I do. Like, it's just like, I feel so strongly that like we deserve better.
Like, yeah, well, okay. So the fiction story, like you show someone 1 to 100 and they're like, oh, I want to do this, but I can't do this. So now how are you're able to actually convince them you can take this risk? I mean, we got to know how are you convincing them? I mean, personally, if you said that to me, hey, Chris, we want to do something no one's ever done before, I'd be like, hell yeah. Like, let's go. That's just how I operate. Obviously, like, I just like love it because that's where all the opportunity is, right? It's like doing it for the first time. Or doing something everyone else is afraid to do, but that should make sense, is how you get the outsized return.
Yes, exactly. And that's the whole thing, right? Is like, we dump money into stuff that aren't moonshots, that have no ability to go viral or to get big. And we dump money into paid ads and all these other things. But in reality, the things that can go quote unquote viral, that can have a huge outsized return, those are the things that you need to have conviction for, and you need to make those investments. And like, people don't use their marketing budgets like an investment portfolio. They don't invest in moonshots. And it's crazy to me. I'm like, you have to have some type of investments.
It's like any portfolio. You have to have a balances of risk. You need some of it that should hit, but it's not going to hit and give you a 100x return. It's going to give you a 10x or 10% return, 20% return, but it's going to do it consistently. And then some of them need to be like this.
Yeah.
And if you are really in a confident position, more of them can be like this. How much does it cost to put together Hacker Chronicles? Like, what is the price that someone's paying to pull together a fiction series?
It's 295 grand.
Okay. 295 grand.
And that includes A-list actor. That we negotiate, that we work with, and all that sort of stuff. So the partner is a sponsor of the content.
Okay.
So they're not the executive producer of the content. They're not like that sort of thing. Like, they are our partner.
Oh, so are they like the exclusive sponsor for every episode? Is that like what that gets you? So it's like, they're signing the deal up front. The Hacker Chronicles are going to happen, 300K. They're going to give you 300. You're going to use that. I assume you might even take other risk on yourself in the production of this thing. Like, maybe you spend that much, maybe you spend less, but like, you're trying to make this thing really successful. Then there's how many episodes come out for?
So yeah, it depends on the series, but like Murder in HR was 12. I think Hacker season 2 was 10. But generally speaking, it would be 10 episodes.
Yeah. So 10 episodes. So they're effectively sponsoring it, taking some risk, but the like topic, the feeling, the brand, you're creating content that would be like the perfect content for them to advertise on. And they're exclusively on it, right?
Yeah, perfectly tailored to their key persona, right? And I think this is a huge advantage. And I think that this is something that people truly don't understand. And it's like, you can create content for your persona that is educational and entertaining, the edutainment stuff. And like, if you go listen to Hacker Chronicles, you will literally learn how to be a hacker. You learn how hackers become hackers. It is real. Like, the stuff in that show, it is a primer on how to become a hacker, which is like, that's crazy. Why would a cyber company want to do that? A cybersecurity company.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to show that the threats are real. Like, every hack from the entire story are either real hacks or something that could actually happen. We had technical consultants that were working with us on the scripts. And obviously there's heightened narrative around it, of course. But yeah, like, you got to make stuff for your key persona there. And the thing that people don't really understand about that is, if this thing becomes like, I would say like a commercial success, right? Like, people outside of HR, for example, listen to Murder in HR. Like, my mom listens to Murder in HR. At my Thanksgiving table, everyone was talking about Murder in HR and talking about who they thought the murderer was and, you know, all that sort of stuff. That is key, because that fuels being remarkable. That fuels the conversation where that CISO or the CHRO can now talk to their husband or their wife about the show together. that it creates this, like, that's why we built that show. That's why, like, Only Murders in the Building is so popular, is because tons of couples watch it, because it's good. It's a good show to watch with your significant other. And so this podcast is much the same way, where you can talk about it with people. And, like, again, that concept is completely lost on B2B marketing. Why would you make something that, like, because we get that all the time. Well, oh, 1.1 million people listen to the first season of Murder in HR, but how many are in HR? I'm like, I don't know. Definitely not all of them. That's for sure.
Yeah, but that, yeah, you're doing something so smart, though, that's so unique, which is, like, people are looking constantly, where's my audience? Where's my audience? Like, I'm trying to find my audience. It's never 100%, right? No. It's never 100%. Like, if you find some show you want to advertise on or sponsor or some event, it's never, almost never going to be 100%. If it is, go wild. Like, if your audience is sitting there in the same spot, you can talk to them, do whatever you can, like, go to that place. But almost always, it's trade-offs. And so you're saying, I mean, a lot of people are making content. They're not really sure who it's going to hit with. And they're also not really sure how they're going to monetize it. And you're just flipping it upside down saying, no, we know up front, if we can get this ICP to come, that, like, it will be easily monetized, guaranteed monetization. And so then it's really about telling a great story for that ICP. And, like, you know, creative constraints help you. They don't hurt. Yep. They help, right?
If you, that's exactly right.
So you know even more, like, this is the raw stuff we want to get in here. It's, I love it. It's so cool. Man, wow. What is
so,
it like?
Yes. So what we did when we were in pre-production for Murder in HR, so it takes two to tango, right? There's visionary guy, Ryan Benici, CMO Gym Pass. A lot of people know him. Very smart guy. I know Ryan, and I send an email out to, I would say, probably like 20 people that I know pretty well, CMO types. And I was like, hey, I'm going to do this super crazy thing. We did the show Hacker Chronicles. It did crazy well. Yeah. And I want to make a murder mystery. And it's super crazy, but I think we could probably get, you know, like a solid 50,000 people or more to listen to this thing. And no one's ever done anything like this. And Ryan Benici was like, let's talk. And so, you know, that's how we did it. I'm, you know, and we sat down and we scoped it out and we talked about, you know, the story, and we were able to obviously get some amazing cast with, you know, Kate Mara and Breck Elman, and the rest of the cast is amazing. And the story is awesome. And, you know, the writing and directing and, you know, everything was great. You know, and then we did 1.1 million listeners. It was number one in all of fiction on Apple. So, like, any fiction story that anyone, you know, has, we're up to like 36 in the world for all podcasts on Apple. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was a massive hit, you know, and if you go read the comments, like, you know, it's a 4.2 stars, right? Like, there's a lot of one stars that are like, This is a commercial. There's a brand in here. I'm like, yeah, it's called product placement. Yeah,
I was just looking at it.
Yeah.
It's like,
and this, I'm like, all those one stars, it's like, please unsub. This ain't for you. You know, like, never be worried about the one stars, right? The one stars were not your audience to begin with, right? It's the four stars. You give me a 4 out of 5 stars and I'm furious, because I'm like, that means it wasn't good enough, right?
That's so fun. And I feel like this is the beginning. You're right at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
It's like a whole new model.
Yeah. So we announced what we call the Murderverse. So the business Murderverse, we announced it at the end of last year. So we're going to be making murder in sales, murder in marketing, murder in IT, and on and on. So we're building out a little cinematic universe of all these things, you know, and it's funny because I had someone who's sort of like, well, what if it gets tired? What if, like, the murder thing gets tired? And I'm like, well, ever since Sherlock Holmes was invented, or even the dawn of humans, a body falls and somebody thinks somebody else did it.
Yeah.
It is the elemental story, right? It's a whodunit, right? We are all interested. And the reason why we chose this is very on purpose. So, A, most B2B storytelling has no propulsive element, right? There's no reason to listen to the end. There's no reason. Like, if you stop this podcast right now, like, you know, the rest of your life is going to be fine, right? I hope you don't.
Keep going.
But in a mystery, you stay till
there's
the end.
A reveal. There's a reveal. Yeah.
And you will always, if you stop that podcast, you're always going to wonder who did it, right? Or you're just going to Google it. But so you need to have a propulsive element to the storytelling. That's something that B2B, you know, marketing just, or content just never has. The other thing is, so we looked at the landscape. And so there's three genres that are interesting. So the two most popular genres in podcasts are true crime and comedy. And then, mm-hmm. you know, business is like 95th. So if you were to be able to layer on a murder mystery, have it be funny, and then layer on this business persona and target that key persona and make a show for them. I've talked about how like murder in HR to me is like a love letter to HR. I love HR. I used to be in HR, and nobody tells their story. It's just Toby from The Office, right? They're made fun of. They're a punchline, and nobody gives them a story that's worthy of the profession, in my opinion. And so you layer those things on each other, and you have a massive potential audience that you're going after. And that's what happened, you know, 1.1 million listeners in 4 months. And we're doing like 25,000 uniques a month right now on those shows. Completely organic, unpaid, any of that stuff. And so like, these are like, you could go spend 300 grand doing a lot of different stuff, but the fact that you could get something that's going to churn, you know, a million listeners and just you know, like over the course of years.
Yeah.
I mean, you go the look magic. At Serial. Yeah. You go look at Serial right now. There's new comments every day on Serial. New people finding Serial. You know, like it's just that's the
I think people forget like how big the world is and you know how interconnected we are and that like there's so much like if something's working, unless you are already one of the biggest companies in the world, the signal you should get from that is like, well, it could probably work more. You know what I mean? And it's funny, even when you were talking about the example of like the Murderverse, first of all, great branding, hilarious, easy to understand. But also like, this is a really good lesson in that for anyone listening, which is like, hey, it's working in one place. That doesn't mean you have to go reinvent the wheel and try it again. If your values are right and the quality of the content is actually unique and compelling and actually good, some people listen to Murder in HR will listen to Murder in Sales. But you can have the stories be totally different about the right sales stuff and you can have the right partner and like you can repeat the right elements and have the other right elements be unique and get way more value out of unlocking this thing. And I just say that because a lot of times I think there's a tendency, especially with creative folks, where they have a breakthrough and they're like, man, we just broke. This is such a good feeling. I need to break through again. And they, instead of taking, you know, 50% the same, 50% new or whatever the balance needs to be, they just go 100% new. And they throw out the thing that they just learned and they go on to the next one. And they're like, why is it so hard? And so I do think there's like just a super interesting lesson in there for anyone on scaling anything. That's so cool that you all are doing.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's awesome. A lot of people have ideas for shows, but they have no idea where to get started. What advice would you give them? Like, where should they start if they've never started?
Yeah, so I believe my process is that you need to make a promise to the listener, that's what a show is. Every episode, you're giving them a promise. And that promise for Jeopardy is answers in the form of questions. If it's 60 minutes, it's that, you know, you're going to get these stories and the tick, 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 and, you know, whatever. Yeah. If it's, he says, choosing the most old man.
That's fine. Shows. No one knows his references, but keep going. They can figure it out.
If it's hot ones, it's that they're eating chicken wings every episode, right? And they got to get to whatever, the ghost pepper or whatever. So you need to have a premise that is unique and interesting. And you need to deliver that promise to the listener every episode, right? And have a structure that you edit and you tighten and that you deliver on a succinct value proposition for your audience. That's where I would start. Don't try to tell a 55-minute story. Try to tell it in 5. And if you can tell it in 5, then it's like you can kind of go from there. But I would have segments. I would have, you know, a structure that you know that you can deliver on over and over and over again. So that's my best piece of advice.
Now, for somebody who has a podcast, and let's say they have a small but mighty audience, and they're trying to figure out how to grow it. So they have people coming back consistently. They hear really good things. I talk to a lot of people who get into this spot where they make something and it's working. You know, it's objectively working. Like they're getting customers or they're getting partners or whatever, but they're trying to figure out how to grow. What's your advice for them?
So my take on this, which is might be a little controversial, I don't waste a single second of my time on growing the podcast except for paid growth. I only do paid growth. So I made a promise to myself, I will never make a show that does not have a marketing budget. And every one of our shows has a marketing budget. Every show we create for our customers has a marketing budget. And I think it's so much faster and more efficient with your time and money to just use paid. And I think that you can use all of the paid channels way cheaper when you're promoting good content rather than promoting your product and services. But then you can, you know, retarget those folks in other ways. So that's my thing. I would never do a project if it doesn't have a marketing budget.
And when you say paid channels, you mean like in the podcasting apps, like, you know,
no, what do you, what I mean, do you like, mean? I mean, display ads. I mean, run a site. Okay. I mean, you know, social ads, stuff like that.
Okay, cool.
PPC type stuff. That's what I think works the best personally.
Treat the podcast like a product in the first place. You wouldn't make a product that has no marketing budget. Do the same thing. Treat the content like product and then market it. And if you can't do that, you shouldn't do it.
100%. Just don't do it. Like, organic is not a strategy, right? Like, otherwise it's an art project. And that's what I say. Yeah. Like, art projects become business projects when you have like goals that you need to achieve. And it's fine to do an art project and that's fun. And it probably is super fun to make that show. But I get people ask me all the time, like, should I make a podcast? I'm like, do you have a marketing budget? If you want to do it for fun, then go for it. But if not, I would never do it.
Great advice. Okay. We're going to go into the rapid fire segment here.
Yep.
Up first, what's your favorite app these days?
I don't know if it's my favorite app, but an app that I consistently really enjoy is The Athletic. I think that they've done an absolutely awesome job on that app.
Awesome. What's the best movie you've seen in the last year?
You're really putting me on the spot. I'm going to cheat and not say a movie. I'm going to say a TV show, and I'm going to say the most recent season of Only Murders in the Building rocked. It was so good, and I just absolutely adore everything about that show, and it is, to me, just perfection.
I mean, that's the perfect answer for you to give. It's the perfect answer. And what's your go-to karaoke song?
I am going to do... Gosh, it's got to be a duet with my wife because she's a really good singer. So I would do something... I don't know. I got to get something deep register. Maybe like something Johnny Cash. If there's some, I don't know. But I got to get something.
Johnny and June?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I think that would be the most fun.
Amazing. Ian, so good to reconnect and see you again. Thank you for coming on the show. Where can people connect with you to learn more and follow Caspian Studios?
Yeah, just go to CaspianStudios.com. I'm Ian at CaspianStudios.com. Obviously, we did a really cool webinar with Wistia. We had like a ton of people that were there and live, and it was an absolute blast. I'm on LinkedIn. But yeah, if you have any questions about shows or building shows or how to do it or advice or whatever, I'm open book there. So want people to make better stuff. So if I can help, happy to do it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ian. We'll be back right after this break.
It's me again.
Frank the Ad Guy.
And this month's podcast shout out goes out to Business Made Simple. Hosted by Donald Miller, CEO of StoryBrand, this show serves up the practical and tactical skills you need to build a business. From launch to scale and everything in between, Business Made Simple is all about taking out the guesswork and helping you create a plan. Check it out at HubSpot.com/podcast network or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now, back to talking too loud.
You know, there's nothing like having a conversation with somebody, starting off saying like, nice to meet you, and then eventually realizing midway through, you have met them. They know that.
You had a real moment smack dab in the middle of this interview when you realized you knew Ian. You had met
Ian. Yes, I'd had one conversation with Ian, and it is really true that this is how I remembered him. It was like, he got so passionate about podcasting. He got so passionate about telling stories. And suddenly I was like, I recognize this passion. Like, oh, it's Ian. I've met you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's so nice to remember someone for their passion. I love that.
It was pretty cool. And I think, the mind works in mysterious ways, right? Like, you know, the things that we use to remember people, situations, conversations. And I think you know, a lot of the stuff in this episode is actually about that, right? So it's like, how do you get your brand in front of the right audience? And how do you get them to remember you? And basically, this is like this kind of reverse, inverse thing of like, we're going to start audience first and attract the exact right audience, and then it's going to be easy. And so I got so excited because I think it's, it feels so fresh and different. It's so easy to describe. You know, I think that's ideas like that. I love. Like if it's fresh and new, but everyone can get it quickly, that stuff's the best.
Yeah. I also appreciated that he, you know, Ian was talking a lot about the fact that like B2B marketers are inherently creative, right? Like they have this like creative capacity. Yeah. And they want to do things. They want to make content that's more risky. And this was such a motivational reminder that like, yeah, the risk pays off. Like he's making fictional podcasts about murder and HR and like hackers and like people are consuming it, you know? It's so, yeah. I don't know. I felt like it was a nice reminder to folks on creative teams within B2B that like sometimes you just got to lean into the weird stuff and like go have fun with it.
Yeah. I mean, being different matters. Like being different is how you stand out. And I think that idea of like finding the way to let the creativity out is what's so important. Because the idea of, for example, if you have a budget, say like $250,000 budget, and you can use that to like advertise your products, I would imagine most people are not hyper focused on exactly where those ads are. They're looking at the performance. That's usually what happens. It's like, all right, so what does the performance look like? Got us a lot of customers, or it could do better, it could do worse. Like, should we change the copy? Like, what should we do? But if you told someone the same thing, it was like, we're going to take the exact amount of money we're going to spend on those ads. We think if it works, we're going to get in front of the exact right customer, but we can't. It's possible that we get like half as many people as we're expecting, or it's possible we get 50 times as many. Now, that should be a bet you would take all day. Like that's a rational thing. If there's that much upside, it's a very rational thing to invest in. But it's confusing for all of us because it's different. It's not guaranteed. It's not programmatic. And you wouldn't even care exactly what the content is necessarily. And by having control in some, or feeling like you have control, it changes the dynamic. So this episode got me thinking, I imagine it'll get other people thinking, like, where are those opportunities? What are the things like that that you can do? What are the other ways of reframing the challenge in front of you so that you can really go after something that has way more upside? Because, I mean, that's what Ian's talking about. And it's just, like, so exciting to see.
Hell yeah.
Well, look, this is another great episode. So fun. If this is the first time listening to the show,
welcome.
Give us a like. Welcome. Subscribe. Thank you. Refer us to others. Great. Really, really appreciate it. And if you have feedback for us, you can always email us at ttlpod@wistia.com. You can connect with Sylvia and I both on LinkedIn. That's where we're spending most of our time these days. We'd love to hear from you. And I think that about does it. So until next time, we'll see you soon.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day, executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.